Okay, that was the last one. Yeah, okay. So maybe to start, the context or the motivation of what I was doing is a bit different than what Dima is having in mind, I guess. So I was not so much interested in quantifying all these effects and making a sensitivity study. For me, it was a bit more like I was planning a study on daylight in residential buildings, and I started to think what it is actually to apply climate-based daylight metrics to buildings where we have such little control and such little knowledge about what's happening inside. And so that brought me back to this question, what is representative daylight metrics and how they can have a physical meaning if I don't know the physical properties of what I'm studying there, because I just don't know the detail in these buildings. And all this brought me to this key question, when do I apply climate-based daylight modeling usually, and what do I know? And well, those who are working with architects can imagine you start designing a building with very limited information, and of course you take your first, and maybe the most important decision based on that. And then gradually the information is increasing, your freedom is decreasing, and at the end you know everything, but then it's too late. And in case of residential buildings, you don't even know everything at the end, because once people move in, they don't let you in anymore. So all that was kind of keeping me busy. And then there was a second, I don't need this, the second thing, I saw a certain imbalance there. So I was trying to summarize all these refinement approaches here. So we have all these phases, and they are mostly about the solar models that we use. Then we have a peak of development effort going into fenestration models and refining those, like higher resolution BSDFs, proxies, ABSDF, all these things, also the photo map, we will hear about that. And then, of course, also the simulation, the positional refinement, the refinement of time steps, rate traverse is one example of that. So there was a lot of effort going into this, and at the same time, the models of the buildings that we have cannot refine because we just, it's out of our control. And well, this was about the application side, the architect's perspective. Now I'm currently working in university, not so much the application side, but we have similar problems. So here I wanted to actually start working with existing models, and I found out that, of course, they are highly detailed models, and Alstan Jakubik and friends did this one in their study in Singapore, where they really had all the furniture and all the mass in those flats scanned, and they know everything about how these people were living. But usually we are far more on the left of the axis, and the Swiss Dwellings database is a nice example. You have thousands of residential units in there, but actually they are encoded in a way that you have very minimal information about the building geometry. You know the building use, the room use, and you know a little bit about where the windows are located, but that's it. Now can I actually compare the climate-based daylight matrix that I generate with the one data set with that of the other data set? And if not, what does it tell us? I mean, is this promise of representativity and physical meaningfulness, how do I translate that actually? Just to give you an example of this level of detail, so the Swiss data, Swiss Dwellings database, this is encoded in what's called well-known text, that's strings. It's a very simple way that allows you to fit geometry into an Excel table, basically. So it's usually used in geographical information systems, but it's also applicable to any kind of geometry. But of course, I don't know the surface properties. I do not know the shading systems here. I do not know how people are furnishing these apartments. So I have very limited knowledge here. And does it mean that we are not able to make any use of such databases? I mean, is this completely useless for us? Or is there something that we can also derive from such abstract or let's say low information density databases that cover such huge amounts of buildings at the same time? Now, we have standards, we have groups who are spending a lot of effort into standardization of applying daylight simulation and assessments, and of course it's always worth to look into their recommendations, because this is a distillation of a lot of experience usually, and so I was just summarizing two of them here. And if you read these critically, you will first find out that this requires quite a lot of knowledge, I mean, this just assumes that you know all these things, right? I mean, usually the architect will not know all this. And second, a lot of this is actually written for the context of offices. I mean, that's definitely not so much for residentials, and probably it's also not for a lot of other building types. So there's a certain gap in there, I guess. Now I'm coming to the other end of the scale. So this is an example of these 3D scans from Alstan's dataset. I have to say Alstan and colleagues, so that was a group who did that back in 2019. And so this was really the very high resolution and very detailed survey of occupied flats. And this is not only about furniture, of course, this is also about all the stuff that people leave on their furniture. And now the question is this something that is not important? Because, yeah, like Nicholas was right, of course, the architect's role is not to tell people where to put their socks or their newspaper. Yeah. It's our task is more to provide them with reasonably healthy and useful buildings. But at the same time, we are somehow promising that our simulations allow to make assumptions about energy use, for example, for artificial lighting. And probably this is more the condition under which the artificial lighting is used than the empty flat. So I think we are somewhere in between, and that was something that fascinated me at that point. So what I did, and this is very similar to what Nima was just presenting, maybe it's not so much driven by geometry. I didn't care about the size of the furniture. I was more thinking about the phases in which I am, or the, maybe also the level of privacy that people want to keep. So, as seen from the architect's perspective, architects usually know what's on the bottom right. I mean, they know kind of the plan, they know the glazing more or less, because that's what they have to specify. Maybe they're on the bottom left, where they have an idea about the sun shading that will be installed. They are usually not on the top left, unless they, yeah, of course, if they design their own flat, they might be, but otherwise, it's not the case. So we have to think about the usefulness of our daylight matrix with a button row of this diagram here. The button row is actually only the building, assumptions on the materials, and in the case of the left side picture, it's also the assumption of some sun shading devices. What I did, and that's on the top right, was a experiment, or I just wanted to find out if a workaround is helpful here. So instead of having all the furniture occluding my walls, I was just reducing the reflections of the walls. It's just something I wanted to try out. So it's really hands-on. I wanted to know whether this helps me or not. And now I was using these four models. This is one flat in Singapore with very few rooms, very simple model in the end. So I was using these four models with rate reverse. I used rate reverse because I wanted to evaluate this entire space. So I wanted not only to have some center points, which are a bit difficult to define in residential buildings. And then I was using the results of rate reverse, which are spatially temporally adaptive. I tried to illustrate that to first evaluate directly the simulation outcomes in terms of illuminance. I was looking at illuminance as we usually measure it horizontally, but also vertical towards the window, parallel to the window, and facing away, and then derive daylight autonomy and spatial daylight autonomy. So it's a very simple setup of just a test, by no means representative for anything. I just wanted to see what parameter has which impact there. Now, for those who are ever planning to do something similar and not to try to use grids of sensors as we do it so often. I took the time to just quickly report how I was assessing the simulation results from ray traverse because I found it kind of, but if you never did it, it might be a bit opaque. The problem with ray traverse first is it doesn't, you don't really, you know, it's you who defines which results are written. So there's not like one table with all the results, but it's actually several tables. Because you can compute all kinds of matrix, you don't know which positions are in this table because it's adaptive to the model or to the scene. You don't know the time steps ahead because it's also adaptive. So actually you have to somehow navigate through all these results. And So what you get from RateAverse is this packed archive of NumPy arrays, and it's the first way to orient this. I'm just showing it to you so that you may one day also be able to use it. So in this NPZ files, you find the names of the arrays, and then if you look into names, you find actually out where you can find the information in the sky, which is actually the time step. You find the zone, which is not so important here, the view, which tells you if you're not only looking into horizontal illuminance, where you're looking at. And I think this is something that we should encourage. So also looking at vertical illuminance or maybe illuminance. And then, of course, you need to know what metrics are on your data set. So this is also a separate table. And if you know that, this just some examples. So here you can print out then the time steps that are actually in your data, or you can print out the view directions that are in your data. And by that, only you can somehow make sense out of this archive of all these tables. So this is one big burden, probably, that when you're starting with RateAverse, you first have to find out where in your results your information is hidden. Yeah. So it's a bit different than Rain. So now, once we're here, we can actually get the data, in this case for one time step. This is one long table then, of course. And what's important here, and that's something that was taking quite some time also to do in the end, you have to take into account that you have spatially adapted results. So you cannot simply average, or you cannot just integrate over the area. You have to weigh the data, otherwise you get completely off. So you have to, for each point, you have to take into account which area is represented by this point. And once you're doing this, then you have this very powerful tool at hand that tells you the entire properties of this building zone that you are evaluating. It's not only one metric, but as many metrics as you decide to evaluate. So I did this now for the four different orientations. It should have been five. So it doesn't work that nicely with the slide. So I was taking actually only one side, one direction, which is parallel to the window for vertical illuminance, and otherwise to the window, facing away from the window, and of course also the horizontal illuminance. And what you can see here is that the distributions of illuminance in absolute numbers obviously change quite a lot. So we are from left to the right, we are losing detail. So the architect would experience it from the right to the left. That means that generally you are always over-predicting in the planning phase when you rely on these metrics. Of course, you can know this by experience, but if you just believe in the metrics and what they are telling you, you would over-predict. And then if you look at the different metrics, then you will also see that they are doing this to a different degree. So the horizontal illuminance is kind of moderately affected, while the illuminance parallel to the window, for example, is completely fluctuating with the level of detail, which makes sense, because if you're looking parallel to the window, you only see what's missing, which is the furniture, right? So when you're looking towards the window, on the other hand, this is not much affected if you're standing close to the window, if it's not completely obstructed by furniture, and, well, this is not so often the case. But, so, this is the absolute numbers. Of course, this is what we are usually promising to provide when we're using climate-based daylight modeling, but when we're doing planning decisions these days, we may actually look more into daylight metrics that are derived from that. And so when we are applying standards, or if you want to follow this and that recommendation, then we come up with something such as daylight autonomy, special daylight autonomy. And here these effects might be moderated a bit. And if you look at this again from the right to the left, so of course an empty building with nothing in it, even though no shading device, has to over-predict. Once you add this shading device, this is a second graph from the right, you're actually already quite close to where you are when you have all the level of detail. So special daylight autonomy, at least in this case, with this building, with this residential unit, was not that much affected as long as you know something about your shading devices. Now, small disclaimer, the bad news is that even if you know your shading device in detail, you don't know how it's operated, and now we are coming back to an old discussion. So this doesn't give us a lot of reliability either. Question is, what is happening if you are moving away from this, let's call it the standard matrix, the default matrix? But this is also somehow confirming this. So special daylight autonomy is affected for level of detail 1, which had no shading devices, but other than that, it's rather stable. And what was also important here, I just checked it for these two rooms, which of course have a similar orientation, but at different depths. The ranking also doesn't change, so there's nothing much unexpected happening with spatial daylight autonomy. Based on horizontal luminance, so this is expected. Now, the question is, of course, what about glare, what about contrast, what about all kind of luminance-based matrix that you could compute? I had, for the sensor point at 160 meters, I had also computed data glare probability, not only vertical luminance. The problem with that was that when you're looking at the maps with the image yourself, this building has definitely no problem with glare. It's located in Singapore, it has an overhang, it's oriented to south, which means you pretty never see the sun. And on the opposite side of the street, there are high building blocks, so there's just no information about glare in this. This is definitely one lack or one missing part of the study that might be of interest. Well, the next problem might be what is actually a good metric for glare in residential buildings. Has any glare metric been evaluated for such conditions, for such uses? I'm not aware of that. But of course, it might be interesting also to think about daylight not only as a functional feature in residential buildings, but also as something that's about comfort and even perception. So I think this will be a nice study for the future. So the conclusions of all that, again, what we are usually using is the horizontal illuminance and anything that's based on that was only moderately affected. And I think looking at it, and so I see this more like a way to systematically reflect what we are usually doing, this appears meaningful and kind of plausible. So I think with that we are rather safe as long as we know something about the shading devices. So I would say we should care less about super detailed models of the buildings and try to rather gather some information about shading devices and how they're used. That would be my conclusion from that. On the vertical illuminance and all metrics that you might derive from those, I'm careful. You should not evaluate glare by those probably, but you might do it against all recommendations. So these might be more affected, but this is mostly true when you're facing away from the window or parallel to the window, and then the problematic case with the sun in the field of the view is already gone, usually. So vertical illuminance in these cases is actually also a valuable information. When you're looking towards the window, it's of course only a problem of the shading device again. So yeah, I'm repeating myself. Without shading devices, you should have knowledge about them and how they operated. You should not say anything about the daylight conditions in such buildings. And what was also kind of good is that in my case at least, the relative ranking was not affected at all. So this was completely consistent. So I would expect that in most cases you can kind of compare variants. Of course, as long as you don't compare one variant, which is very detailed, and the other one you know nothing about. So then you shouldn't compare apple and pear. And yeah, the luminance-based metrics obviously need to be done. And I think this is a topic in itself when it comes to residentials. I think I was very quick, and I tried my best to be so. So thank you for your interest. And there are any questions, I may try to answer them. And if I'm not able, then I can forward to Lima.